On the line is Mr. Alex Newman. How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me, Hal. And Isabella?
No, Alex is a multilingual, a young man in his early 30s, a father, a loving, dedicated husband, and he is also the author of several books, including Crimes of the Educators, and for the millions of people on Facebook, I'm showing a copy, actually co-author with our late dear friend Samuel Blumenfeld, who passed away in 2015. And you are on a nationwide tour. You started off in sunny Florida back in, early May, and you hit the Carolinas. I think you followed the path of the hurricanes, right?
That's right, yeah.
And I would like to think that what you're doing is leaving a wake, not of destruction, but of instruction.
I love it. And
That was spontaneous, you know, by the way. That's the best kind,
awesome.
Right?
A wake That's how you know you have a genius for a radio host.
Maybe Diana will put me on full time here. So tell us about your tour, and it's called Rescue the Children Tour, right?
That's right.
And by the way, there's no T-shirts and bobblehead dolls, right, for your tour?
No, but we need some, though, so don't give me ideas.
Yeah. Well, we got Isabella can be your marketing director, and she can produce something.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about. But I know it's called the Rescuing Our Children and Our Nation Tour. Began in Florida and then up through Georgia, the Carolinas, Virginia. Then we just did the Red Pill Expo. Now we're up in New Hampshire. Tomorrow we'll be in Massachusetts. And we've got, I think, almost 60 stops now across 30-plus states. And the title kind of summarizes it all, right? We want to rescue our children, and that's worthwhile for its own sake. I mean, what's more important than our own children, for crying out loud?
Right.
You know, their mental well-being, their academic well-being, their spiritual well-being, and, of course, their physical well-being. But beyond that, we also see this as a means to rescuing our nation, because the reality is right now 87% of our kids are in public schools where they're being indoctrinated, they're being systematically dumbed down, as Sam and I showed in Crimes of the Educators. And so we put together a special report in the New American Magazine called Rescuing Our Children, and we're hoping to get a million copies of that out. Plus, with this speaking tour, we're hoping that we'll be able to rescue millions of children and give us, you know, a fight. We don't need to rescue all the children. It would be very nice.
We would obviously want to do that, but yes.
Yeah, we need to be realistic. You know, we can only do so much, but the reality is homeschool students, kids from good, you know, private schools, Christian schools, are so much better educated, are so much more competent, that even if we just rescue a minority of them, I have faith and confidence that we really can put a stop to a lot of this evil and maybe roll back some of the progressivism that is kind of silently smashed our families and our churches and
let me add
our
to that
and our liberties.
I think not only are they, you know, they're better educated, I think they're happier and more well adjusted.
No question about it. And I mean, there's, you know, people always say, well, what about socialization? How are you going to socialize a homeschooler?
Yes,
there's a lot of data on that. You know, if you go to the National Home Education Research Institute, they've collected all this data from academic journals, and what they found is that homeschoolers do better on every single measurable metric of socialization. Like you said, they're better adjusted. They have less peer dependence. They can interact with people of all ages, better communication skills. They don't need to, you know, depend on what other people think about their sneakers for their self-esteem. Mm-hmm. They're just better all around. And, it's sad but true. Unfortunately, we only have about 2.5 to 3 million homeschoolers in America. We need to multiply that by 5 or 10. But, it's a good start.
Well, you know, Alex, I've been involved with youth camps since 1990, and goes now I'm the co-founder and director of Camp Constitution, which is a family camp where there's a lot of youth. And when the youngsters come into camp, if I don't know them in advance, I can almost spot the homeschoolers or the private schoolers as opposed to the government schoolers. And there's some exceptions, don't get me wrong, but they'll shake your hand. They have a cheerful countenance. I remember one day I was in Troy, New York, meeting somebody in downtown Troy, a little coffee shop. And on my way out, there was this little black fellow. He's about 12 years old. He's in a school uniform, and he holds the door for me, and he very cheerfully says, "Have a nice day, sir." And I looked at him and I said, Redemption Christian Academy. And his mother was about 20 feet away. How did you know that? I said, it was a very easy guess. You know, he didn't have a chip on his shoulder. He didn't think the world was out to get him. He and that particular school is an incredible school that has a Christian worldview, and the students are loved. It's strict, but it's strict, but they're loved. It's one of the few predominantly black boarding schools in the maybe the only one in the country. In fact, Holyfield, the former heavyweight champ, one of his daughters went there, and it's bare bones. I mean, it's not some fancy prep school, and she was used to having a comfortable life, you know, a little princess, you know, daddy's princess. Daddy, I went at the first day. Daddy, I want to go home. And he said, no, girl, you're staying. And after about a week, she didn't want to leave because she knew she was nurtured and she was loved. And that's the thing that you're not going to get in most public schools. And I went to a government school in the 70s. And I can say I had several remarkable teachers that I will benefit be. But with the exception of people like Duke Pesta, and if you were in a public school, I would say guys like you, but it's few and far between. And so tell us, now you're the author of Crimes of the co-author of Crimes of the Educators. Tell us a little bit about, and I know that your speaking tour discusses a lot of the content of the book. So tell us, why would you use such a strong statement, Crimes of the Educators? I mean, do they go out and rob banks after class? Is that what they're doing?
Well, the reality is, Hal, that many, many crimes are being perpetrated against children, against taxpayers, and so we actually outline what I think is an ironclad legal case, and in fact, we've been in contact with attorneys who've actually expressed interest in pursuing this in a court of law, but there are actual crimes being perpetrated here. I mean, the first and most obvious and probably the most serious one is, treason. We're talking about a concerted, deliberate effort to overthrow our system of government, our way of life, the foundations of our civilization, using subversion, using quiet revolution, you know, not sending armies by day, but trying to subvert the system by night by brainwashing the children. And if you read the writings of people like John Dewey, they were very transparent about what they were trying to do, and they recognized that if parents and teachers understood this, he said there would be a violent reaction to what they were doing. So they understood full well the nature of what they were doing, and at the top of the education establishment, this is still very much the case to this day. They hate the principles America was founded on, and they want to destroy them. And so, you know, even back in the 1980s, Ronald Reagan put together a commission and said that if a foreign power had imposed this crazy educational system on us, we might well have viewed it as an act of war.
And that was 1983, right? What was the name of that?
Right.
That was
the National Commission on Excellence in Education. The report was called A Nation at Risk.
And you can find that online pretty much anywhere, right? Just go.
That's a publicly available government document, and they found that our future as a nation and as a people is at risk, and that if a foreign power had done this, we would have said it was an act of war. I say, and Sam said, we should view this as an act of war. That's exactly what it was. Just because they didn't come in here with tanks and missiles doesn't make it any less an act of war against our nation. So, you know, that's obviously the most serious one. Then we get into, you know, child abuse in the classroom, which is now systematic, the deliberate dumbing down of the children, the drugging of the children, the systematic effort to destroy their faith in biblical religion. And it goes on and on.
You know, let's go on to the drugging. Now, if you go to most public schools, you're going to see big old signs. It's going to say drug-free zone. But that's a lie, isn't it?
That's exactly right. I mean, it's drug-free zone for drugs that they don't dispense, but the drugs that they do dispense, which includes, you know, hardcore amphetamines, for example. A drug dealer would get years in prison for giving that to a kid, and yet when the school gives it to the kids, it's described as, quote-unquote, a medical treatment. But the reality is they're doing this damage to the kids, and the symptoms of the damage become manifest, and then they say that the solution is to put them on hardcore drugs. That's crazy. That's actually criminal, but that's what's happening systematically all across the United States.
And it's a billion-dollar business, isn't it? Multi-billion-dollar business.
Multi-billion-dollar business, that's right. We're talking so much money here for these drugs, for the insurance companies, for the providers, for the healthcare associations, for the psychiatrists. I mean, everybody's making money, and kids are being destroyed in the process.
And this was started. This was started in the early 90s, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And you know, the problem has mushroomed since then. But if you look at the same countries, you know, a tiny fraction of the amount of children that are drugged here in the United States are drugged. So there's very clearly problems in the system. The incentives are all wrong, right? The federal government has incentivized this to happen. It's a national disgrace. And, you know, what happens to these kids is the consequences of taking these drugs are very often irreversible, right? You can't undo them. And many of them are psychological and psychiatric. And if you read the warning labels on these drugs, I mean, the companies themselves will tell you some of the horrors that
suicide.
These medicines lead to.
Yeah.
That's right, and mass murder.
And I would think most of these, I think there was one school shooting prior to the introduction of psychotropics. It was actually a young lady in the late 1980s. But all of these psychotropic, almost all of these school shootings have been by people who have been on psychotropics. Is that correct?
That's right. Yep. And you know, they more and more now they try to conceal that fact. But that's exactly right. They're putting these kids on all sorts of medication that, you know, again, you don't have to trust me. Just open up the package and read the warning label. It'll tell you right there. It may cause suicidal ideation, homicidal ideation, stunted growth, you know, permanent brain problems. And that's the reality of what we're dealing with. It's a massive crisis, and it's self-inflicted. It's not necessary, but the harm that's being done to these children, the only way they can keep it under control is to turn the kids into zombies with drugs. It's absolutely shameful and criminal.
Well, in fact, Sam Blumenfeld, now with the drug issue, Sam Blumenfeld, and we're about to publish an unpublished book, a manuscript, that Sam believed that the AD, attention deficit disorder, which leads to the drugs, is almost exclusively responsible because of the Look-Say method. That's a leading culprit of this ADD. So when a student says signs of ADD, they don't say, oh, that's because you've learned through the whole language or Look-Say. We know the solution. We're going to give Hal Shurtleff and Alex Newman a call. We're going to get their Alpha Phonics book, right? They don't do that. They say, drugged a little son of a gun, because we'll get a nice little kickback from the government, and we won't have to deal with this person. He's going to graduate in 3 years, and we'll be done with him.
That's exactly what happens. And you're exactly right, Hal. The solution to most of these problems is simply to teach the kids how to read properly. And Sam understood that, and he actually did a phenomenal job of that. Even the damaged kids, you know, even the kids where the damage had already been done, he would take dyslexics and teach them how to read properly with phonics, with his very simple tool. And I can vouch for the tool. I've used it on my own children, and they're phenomenal readers. It's really very simple. So Sam could cure dyslexics. And, you know, all these PhDs in dyslexia, all these gazillions of dollars going to, you know, specialty reading experts and stuff, it's all just being flushed down the tubes. It's fleecing taxpayers when the solution was right in front of us all along.
And it's about $10 a book, you know?
That's exactly right.
and we'll
you can even find it for free on the internet, right?
And, well, actually, yeah, the Sam Blumenfeld Archives, you can download it free of charge. Make a donation if you like. But because sometimes the best solutions are the most simplest. And, you know, it's interesting. I was in the second grade. I was what they used to call the dumb. I was the lowest, the dum-dums, right? I couldn't read because I thank God that I had trouble with Look-Say. Yeah, we used to use those terms back then. They weren't very nice, but we kind of got over it, you know. So the teacher said to my mom, who was born in 1920, and that's all she knew was phonics. He said, why don't you tutor him at home? And she said, sure. And within about a month and a half, I was a pretty good reader. And from being the bottom, I was pretty much on the top, only because I learned how to read. I don't think my mother understood the Look-Say versus phonics. She just knew phonics, you know, and again, you know, Sam Blumenfeld, as I mentioned him a number of times over the years on this show, he used to write to public schools. He used to write to school superintendents all around the country. And all those letters are on our website, the Sam Blumenfeld Archives. He would say, give me your worst school, and I will turn things around, and I won't charge you a dime. And he very seldom got a response. Sometimes it's, thank you very much for your concern, you know. But he was friends with the incredible late Marva Collins. And tell us a little bit about Marva Collins, because I know you're familiar with her work.
Yeah, well, she created a phenomenal school primarily for black children. And what she proved was that all the racists were wrong, right? All the racists who said, oh, you know, the black people can't learn, blah, blah, blah. They were proven conclusively incorrect. Really, all that they need is proper education, which is what Sam advocated all along, right? If you teach children proper reading methods, It doesn't matter if they're black, white, yellow, purple, red, you know, whatever color. They can learn how to read, and they can become highly educated, smart, productive citizens. And so, you know, the travesty, the tragedy that's taken place in our inner cities, you know, it is so unnecessary. It's so additionally horrifying. You know, it's even more horrible than it seems, because this was all deliberately inflicted on us. And so we actually have two chapters in Crimes of the Educators about this. And, you know, we explain that actually they deliberately targeted these communities first. As kind of, you know, to do experiments, and then later on they moved out to the rest of society. But it is so evil. It's so awful. And, you know, it's not debatable. The evidence is all there. The data is all there. And Marvin Collins helped prove this. So
yeah, you have a chapter, I think it's called The Creation of a Black Underclass.
That's right.
I know Sam had a newsletter back in the mid-90s that dealt with that, and he looked into the IQ test. And the history of the IQ test was designed to prove that blacks and other non-whites were inferior to whites. Is that correct?
That's what I understand, yep.
And it came out of Worcester, Massachusetts, the college out of Worcester, the Clark University, to justify eugenics. And not to say that there are some people who are going to do better than others. That's just the way God made us. Doesn't mean you're a good bad person or a good person. There are some people like Duke Pestum, who was the first guest and a colleague of yours. Duke said, forget, he said, when it comes to English, when he was in the second grade, he was ready to be a professor, but forget it, English professor, but math, forget it, like you. He said math was not his subject, right? And it still isn't, because he was in a different time zone. He had to figure out what time should he call in. I thought, wait a minute, I think we're okay if you call in at your time is 2. I said, oh, okay, that's right. So that's the way, you know, some people have certain skills, and some people are more athletic than others, and it doesn't mean that other people aren't as athletic or are bad, worse than you. It's just the way God made us. It's our differences. And those differences, I mean, your strengths should be highlighted, and that's it. Hey, if you're a great scientist, you shouldn't be teaching English. You should be teaching science or becoming a scientist, et cetera.
Yep. And, you know, it's so tragic that all this has been lost. And it's interesting that you mentioned eugenics. I think a lot of people don't realize that the progressive utopians who created the government school system that we operate under today, many, many of them were the same quacks and wackadoodles who jumped on board the eugenics bandwagon.
That's right.
Who wanted to, you know, very Hitlerian. They wanted to perfect the human gene pool by weeding out the DNA they considered to be undesirable. And, you know, we saw where that leads. And nowadays, the progressives like to pretend that it's conservatives and Republicans who believe that nonsense.
Right.
But, you know, they can't get the stink of that off of them. That's their thing. You know, and it always has been their thing. Margaret Sanger and all these people who, all these groupies around John Dewey, that was their thing. They believed in eugenics. They believed they were superior to everybody else. And they wanted to guide reproduction wisely. Very, very much along the lines of what Adolf Hitler was doing, because they believed in these quack ideas. And, you know, the evolution was kind of their guiding ideology. And they thought, well, hey, just like Hitler, hey, if we can evolve people to be superior getting rid of, say, black people or, you know, whatever race they chose to target, then, you know, we'd all be better off. And, of course, that's nonsense. That's disgusting. But that's what these people believe.
In fact, the Nazis didn't teach us. We taught, when I say we, the eugenics taught the Nazis, the American eugenics, and Hitler, he was very appreciative of the work they've done. And in fact, Margaret Sanger, who's Planned Parenthood, if you're a Democrat elected to Congress, you must be a strong, hardcore supporter of Planned Parenthood, or you don't, they will reject you. In fact, it's fascinating that in 1938, Margaret Sanger wrote a letter to Dr. Clarence Gamble, who was the president of the Eugenics Society. And I actually, you can find that letter online. It came out of Smith College, where her papers are. And we went to the house across the street from where we used to live in Milton, Massachusetts. And she said in so many words that we don't want the people to think we want to exterminate the Negro race. And no, she wasn't performing abortions. She was performing birth control. Mm-hmm. And she said, we have to get the clergy members and we have to get the doctors. And Gamble said, no, we don't want. No, he wasn't in favor of that. And it's just ironic that we had one of our instructors, who happens to be a black minister, Reverend Stevie Kraft, he read the letter across the street. We have it on our YouTube channel, so please just put in Clarence Gamble and Reverend Kraft, and you'll see it come up. And he simply reads the letter and comments on it. Five doors down was the, it's a private residence, but it's where George H.W. Bush was born. He just passed away back in fact, he died the day that we were in front of the house. His dad, Prescott Bush, was the first treasurer of Planned Parenthood. And, you know, when I have some time, I'm going to go into the Harvard Gamble's papers. Gamble was the grandson of one of the founders of Procter & Gamble. And he inherited some money, and he was able to dedicate his time to researching spermicides and, you know, things of that nature. And that's his legacy. But I don't have any smoking gun with, you know, I don't have any correspondence between Prescott Bush and Gamble, but they lived nearby at the same time frame. And I because he was the first treasurer of Planned Parenthood, there's got to be a friendship, and there should be some interesting letters. I shouldn't say this on air because somebody at Harvard's going to get those letters and throw them away, you know, all the damning information. But
you know, Prescott Bush, they also came after him for his Union Bank, which was helping to trade and fund the Nazis.
That's correct,
so,
right.
Yeah. These people all come from the same ideology. Of course, they're involved in Skull and Bones, the Skull and Bones Society, which, you know, has been right at the center of so many of the problems we're talking about and so many other problems that we're facing as a nation. But on these Planned Parenthood, when I was at university, we would print up these quotes with Margaret Sanger pictures on huge posters, and we would go sit up at the University of Florida. And, you know, these horrifying quotes, and people would come up to us and be like, how dare you have that quote? Oh, no, that's the founder of Planned Parenthood. And she never said that. So we would go to the library and get the book that she wrote, and we'd have them right there on the table so that when somebody said, oh, she didn't write that, we'd say, well, here's her book.
And then what they do instead of saying, gee, maybe I was lied to, and I'm sure you got some converts there, but most of them will they'll call you a fascist or
how dare you destroy my worldview.
You have no right to challenge me intellectually and morally.
You know,
give
them a moral
right.
dilemma. Yeah, I have very strong opinions about Planned Parenthood and all that stuff because I am a pro-life person. I believe that every person has a right to live given by God, and it doesn't matter what you believe in. Nobody has the right to kill a child who is completely innocent before they even have a chance to be born.
That's right.
Because my youngest sister was born with Downs. Mm. And it's like, oh yeah, those people in Planned Parenthood, they would have snuffed out her life because, oh, she doesn't have a chance to live a better life. It says, are you God?
She's probably been a total blessing to you and your family.
Oh my goodness, she's the best. She is such a smart little girl. She can give high fives, she can give handshakes, knuckles. She's an amazing person that I'm so glad was spared from that. And I'm glad my mom was, you know, has a sense of morality, and she's like, no.
Well, when my wife was pregnant, my son who's now 22, they said that he might be Downs and you should do an amnio. Now, the nurse who was doing this didn't like to do it, you know. And, of course, a lot of the people in the medical profession are the ones that are making these choices or promoting the wrong choices. And he said, no. I said, why do you want to do an amnio? Which, by the way, can cause a death of the baby. Okay. It's relatively risky. Well, the baby might be Downs. I said, okay, then what? And they didn't say, well, maybe you want to kill the baby. They didn't say that, but that's what they were alluding to. And, you know, the pregnancy is supposed to be an important, you know, it's a great time. It's where the other children can feel, and they bond with the baby. And, oh, gee, the poor baby, the Down syndrome, what makes them Downs is that their IQ is about 50 to 60, right? Now, in the eyes of God, we are pretty stupid. I mean, you can't measure. God's IQ cannot be measured. So the average IQ is about 100?
Yeah, probably.
That's the average IQ.
He created the DNA. I'm pretty sure his intelligence is way above ours.
That's right.
Yeah,
so for the sake of 40 IQ points, we're willing to kill. So God should, if God used that same standard, we would have been wiped out
a long time ago.
And it goes right back to what we're saying on this tour, Hal. You know, as these educational criminals destroy children's belief in biblical religion, they lose the understanding that every one of those babies
That's right.
is made in the image of God. And every one of those babies has value, whether he or she might have less IQ points or more IQ points or
it's
a different skin color or a different head shape. You know, they're all made in the image of God. God gave them life, and we have no right to take it away. But because 87% of our kids are stuck in these institutions 5 days a week, 8 hours a day for 12 years, they're being so brainwashed that they can actually go out and think that it's reasonable to kill an unborn baby, or now in the case of the governor of Virginia, to kill a postborn baby, and soon to kill old people. You know, that's how they prepare the way for these atrocities. That's how they did it in Germany. That's how they did it in
Russia,
the Soviet Union, and in China, and in Cuba, and everywhere else. They brainwash the people until they're willing not just to tolerate atrocities, but to help perpetrate atrocities, and that's where this is going in America, too.
So we have about 2 minutes left. Where can the millions and millions of viewers and listeners, if they want to find out where you'll be speaking, where can they find that?
Well, they can order a copy of the special report at thenewamerican.com/rescuingourchildren. And if they want to find me on speaking tour, go to libertysentinel, SENTINEL.org/tour, TOUR. That's libertysentinel.org/tour. I'll be in Plymouth, New Hampshire tonight. I'll be in Cape Cod tomorrow for lunch. And I'll be in Reading, Massachusetts tomorrow for dinner
at 6:30. We're almost full, so you'd have to call me. We'll find a place for you. There's about maybe four or five places left, so at 857-498-1309. But you can also watch Alex on YouTube and just put his name in there. Put good looking smart guy and your videos will pop right up, right? All right. Thank you, Alex. God bless
you
on the tour, too.
God bless you guys.
Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye, guys.
Okay, we have one whole minute left. Well, we have 1 minute left, so we can promote this beautiful camp program. It's coming right up July 28th to August 3rd at the Pittsfield at the Lakeside Christian Camp and Conference Center. You know Janine Turner? You know who she is? She was in the Gosnell movie. She's an actress. We got a hold of us, and she will either be there in person or Skype in and teach a couple of classes.
Wow.
We have a British Lord, Lord Christopher Monckton, will be there teaching us about the wickedness of the European Union, and we have one of the top climate scientists in the world, Professor Willie Soon, will be exposing the climate change fraud. He comes with his whole family, and we have tuition help available. It's a family camp for entire families, unaccompanied minors or unaccompanied adults. So campconstitution.net. And please visit us on our YouTube channel. Subscribe and share those videos too. So, well, thank you. You're listening to the Diana Plosh Show on WSMN 1590 AM, Nashua's Talk Radio.